Welcome to Five Strike Weekly. This week, the shouts for Pineda out get louder from the fans, and the Atlanta United front office makes a miraculous trade. We're getting all that and more coming up. And wherever it is you get your pods, subscribe, share, and leave us a good rating. Welcome to the show, Five Strike fam. I'm AJ, and this is Michael. And Atlanta United, unfortunately, fell to FC Cincy at home 2-1, and it really read for a lot of frustration and a lot of fans calling for Pineda out. But I don't know if we're quite there yet in terms of the coach being fired, but at least we will discuss this and the performance. I think it's a lot better of a performance than we actually think it is. It's just how we unfortunately cough up the lead here in this match that really leaves a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths, but and especially doing this at home. But before we get into all that, shouts out to the Patreon members and everyone who has donated. Much love to you guys. You guys absolutely keep the lights on and you guys keep us going. But likewise as well, anybody that is watching, we also have recognized that the algorithm is showing that a lot of people that have been watching are not subscribed. So please go ahead and subscribe. Don't be a freeloader. But let's get into the actual match review then. So it's following that 2-2 draw that was a little bit upsetting as well against Philadelphia Union, that we coughed up a lead there. We went up against another strong Eastern Conference team. And FC Cincy, Miles Robinson, Alec Kahn, I mean, Yamil Assad as well came into town. And yeah, it was, it started off okay. I mean, that first few minutes, we were trying to make some things happen. Alec Kahn had to make a pretty good save on a Saba Lapsenitse chance. And that first half largely was pretty even. We, definitely had some decent chances. Rios starting up top. Also Edwin Mosquera on the left. It was a little bit makeshift. We were, obviously are dealing with a lot of injuries up and down the spine and on the wing. But, I think with that, we still actually kind of exceeded the expectations with such a makeshift lineup. But, how did you see this match?
I mean, FC Cincinnati is going to be a tough order no matter what. I was not expecting us to win this game. I was hoping for a draw. Probably should have been a draw. But once again, we have shot ourselves in the foot. Like I said last week and the time before that, we keep giving up these very, very soft goals in, unforced error type of situations. Like, FC Cincinnati did not provoke us in such a way that causes us to give them a perfect opportunity to score. We do it to ourselves. This has been the third game in a row where we've done that. It cannot continue. If we want to be considerable contenders in this division, in this conference, we need to not do that, especially at home. It can be slightly forgiven away, but at home, uh-uh. And this is hopefully not going to start trending for us. But it's been three times, and I think that that's what the definition of a trend is, or at least it starts there. So hopefully, we nip it in the bud next game. And against Chicago, that's a prime target to do that too.
Right. And, in this match, at least in terms of that first half, we play it pretty decently without putting the ball in the back of the net. It was definitely a transitional type of match where it was pretty back and forth. And, there was quite a few chances for each side. But Alec Kahn, as as keepers that play against us do, they stand on their head, and it's quite annoying. But yeah, Alakan had a really good match, and you know, it's one of these things where you know, the shot from us in terms of getting into the second half, where Thiago Almada, he was able to score a pretty damn good goal that's you know, skipped along the ground and beat him on the far post. Yeah, I mean, it was like, it was this chance that I think kind of was born out of some really good good build up, but also you know, playing fast. And Edwin Mosquera, he's able to you know, kind of beat his man and then you know, lay it off where he's able to find Thiago Almada, who's able to you know, dribble it into a little bit of space and then hit that far corner. And it's you know, a goal of the match day you know, kind of nominee. But yeah, not gonna win it, unfortunately, this week. There were a lot better goals. Gone are the days that we win MLS goal of the match day or goal of the week even without merit. We yeah, I think that's pretty telling. It's pretty telling, kind of the temperature of the fans. But yeah, Atlanta United's lead didn't last long, unfortunately. And yeah, it was yet another instance where we score and we immediately make substitutions. But, you know, we pontificated the reasons why on the post-match live fan reactions. But, I mean, what's your thinking in what Gonzalo Pineda's you know, thought process is? You know, obviously it's a little bit more, they're playing subs, but you know, should there be a little bit more thought that goes into when that actually happens?
I mean, it's obviously you can't anticipate when a goal is going to come, so I'm going to kind of take the goal out of the equation and just analyze it from him deciding to put in like almost a full line change at the same time. I think it's quite clear now, at least to me, that when you do full line changes with Atlanta United, you need to settle things down and make sure everyone has at least a little bit of time to get up to game speed, because we've been hit multiple times now where we have players come in and they are like, the other team hits us really hard and our guys look like they're chickens with their heads cut off. They just don't know what's going on. They aren't finding their guys. They're, you know, their marks are getting open and things are kind of falling apart, you know, at the seams. So hopefully they've noticed that trend, and maybe you space out your subs a little bit more. You don't do as many full line changes, but if you do, like, I don't know, you put in some more veteran type players, like maybe include a Dax McCarty in some of these. But, you know, you put in like some other players that maybe don't have the mental fortitude or whatever, or they aren't switched on immediately when they get on the pitch. This has shown that this has been a place where teams can hurt us. We take a long time to get settled. And, you know, I remember on the Five Takes podcast, they talked about how, you know, the team gets a little, it takes a lot of time for the team to get started in general when the game starts. And now you have, when subs come on, it's almost like a mini start of the game where you have to re-get settled. And in those time periods, we seem fairly vulnerable. So hopefully we can figure out how to better utilize subs so we're not so vulnerable.
Yeah. And it's a little bit of that too, where, you know, the starts that we have had, we are definitely a more second half type of team this season. We've scored the majority of our goals in that half. And yeah, we need to be able to, because our record when we score first is decent, really quite good. But yeah, the problem is, you know, when you don't really prepare yourself, I think, to be up for it from minute one, I think that's, you know, kind of preparation that's a little bit, not a little bit, that's a lot of bit on Gonzalo Pineda. And making sure that his boys are coming out the gates hot, so that the rest of the match is a little bit easier, especially at home. On the road, okay, that's a different story. You know, you can pace yourself. You can, you know, you don't have to, you know, be just completely hot off the blocks. But it's exactly what you mean with just full line change. I mean, it's not, I wouldn't say it's a full line change, but it's a, you know, it's a triple sub, and that's going to unsettle the team. And you know, even before that, when Ronald Hernandez had to replace Noah Cobb at center back, that, you know, how woefully shallow our depth is at the moment at defense. I mean, we basically have to have our lone fullback depth play at center back. Like, that's just as damning as it gets in terms of how poor it is defensively and in terms of that depth. So, you know, the fact that we didn't really make another move for a defender either before the trade deadline passed, this is all concerning. But for sure, in terms of in this match, right when Yakumakis, Silva, and Jay Fortune came on, not Dax McCarty, like Michael Weiss was saying. I don't know why I just said your entire name, but just so people remember, because it was your birthday. Name. It's your birthday, and so that's, you know, that's it's give us some shouts of some love for Michael Weiss in the comments below. By the way, if you're watching on YouTube, but anyway, so yeah, basically. Yakumakis and Silva coming on where they both missed the last match due to injury. They weren't exactly, I think, at full speed either. And then so you pretty much have one on each line, pretty much kind of have some, kind of teething that they have to do to get, you know, kind of at game speed here. And basically, Almada, he decides to also take a short corner when we're up here, and it's very ill-advised. We don't have the players that actually are, I think, switched on / know that maybe it was, because that pass didn't seem like anybody knew that it was coming. At least on our side, it looked like we passed it right to FC Cincy, and
Lucho Acosta.
Yeah,
you don't passed pass it to Lucho Acosta.
Of all guys, he's Argentinian, but my guy, he's on the wrong team here. He may be your countryman, but it is very, very poor. And
Almada scuffs the pass on a training ground play that they had devised, and he decides to pull the trigger on this play right after we make a substitution where there's three new players on and they're still, like we said, getting into the game speed. Why are you going to try and do something tricky like that? Even Pineda said in the post-match press conference, when you do a large change like that, you just put the ball into the mixer to get guys settled and ready. You don't do something tricky and crazy like that, because people are just not ready. Especially on your side. And the other side's obviously not gonna be ready too, because they're trying to scramble to find, my guy I'm covering went out, I need to find the new guy, and I don't know how he's gonna behave or whatever. So, you know, it's kind of chaos, and in that chaos you can get at least some semblance of you can calm the game down a bit when you're on the attack. Because you don't have to be pressured to figure out things instantaneously. But when you put yourself in a situation like that, where you scuff a pass and it lands on the feet of one of the most dangerous players in the league, and he basically has a 1-2 into completely open territory with a striker that gives him like a one-on-one with Brad Guzan, especially the guys who came in and other guys that were out there, knew that this play was going to happen. They just didn't. And that's not acceptable. Pineda said this is an example of Thiago being immature, inexperienced, not knowing to settle the game instead of try something tricky. And, you know, that came and bit us. So, and for once in like a blue moon, Pineda kind of came out and called a spade for once and said Thiago made a mistake, essentially. and usually he's very protective of the of his players, but this time he was, you know, fairly honest about what transpired, and I respect that, because sometimes you do have to call a spade, and Tao is a big boy, he'll figure it out and move on and be perfectly fine.
Right.
I just hope that he learns the lesson, and maybe we don't do that next time, because, I mean, again, it's just this, like, confluence of errors that like, should never happen. You shouldn't, on a set piece, be passing to one of the best tens in the league who just is a one touch away from getting a, you know, their striker a one-on-one with your goalkeeper. Like, that just shouldn't happen. And then Mascara shouldn't have a, like, a almost Atlanta United historically bad pass the game before that. You know, like, these things just shouldn't be happening, especially back-to-back. Like, but, and it's not even necessarily guys on our team who are, like, the depth pieces who are making these, like, you know, gigantic blunders. These are, like, regulars. So it's just, I don't know, maybe they're a little bit in their head. They need to come back down to earth.
Yeah. It's our star player who passed it to the reigning league MVP, essentially. And, yeah, you know, with that as well, I mean, that goal, I feel like there was also a few naivete moments in that as well, where not only the pass to Lucho Acosta, but also Caleb Wiley, just not really, I mean, just take the yellow. Foul him at the halfway line. I mean, he's got the pace. Just take the yellow, and you stop the play right there. You know, and after that, then you can settle, and then you can, you know, kind of you know, figure out how to you know, kind of keep them at bay after that. But you know, you got to be able to get organized in transition. I mean, this FC Cincy team is just like that. That's where they can kill you, and it's a team that coming in wasn't really scoring a lot of goals. I mean, they basically were not clinical, and yeah, we basically gifted them the best chances that they could have in front of goal. And I think it's also this, though. Gonzalo Pineda calling out Almada, well, also he needs to have a little bit of that awareness for himself with those line changes that he made that affected everything, you know. And so, you know, yes, you go up, well, then yes, you know, you got to tell your team to settle, to make sure that, you know, because it's been happening. This has been, unfortunately, the trend where after we score, we get scored on very quickly. And this is not the first match that's happened. And so, you know, it's absolutely also on Pineda, but you know, we'll get to, you know, further things about Pineda and his record. But yeah, unfortunately, yeah, pretty much a little bit right after that, it was, you know, the 64th minute, which they scored the equalizer, and yeah, we basically 64th minute, yeah, they score again, and it's, yeah, we can't give up two goals at home. Like, that's just that's too many goals. It's just a level of defending that we are not capable of doing. I think that in some level, like, okay, yeah, we're a team that can score a lot of goals usually, but against a really, really good side as well, with three U.S. men's national team players in their defense, FC Cincy is a tall order to score three goals. It's just not happening. You gotta be safer than that. And this second goal is just exploiting the height and the kind of lack of awareness from Ronald Hernandez. So it's not really something that, you know, we can really hang our hat on too hard, because Hernandez isn't a starter. He's just a depth player, but
he's played out of position too. Yeah. And you know, he's not exactly, you know, I'm not expecting him to set the world on fire when he comes on, but like this is unfortunate that he plays on side two. I think it was it the striker and Lucho Acosta. Like, you can't let that happen. Like, exactly. You can't playing on one player is bad enough. Playing on two, you just are not paying attention.
Right. And it's that. It's like, it's a player who's generally not organizing the line. He's not a player that's making sure that he's has to step forward. And I think it's also this. I'm surprised FC Cincy didn't try to exploit it even more, because they brought on another striker later on, and I mean, the size difference between those two, they should have just gave the ball to him and just told him to drive at Ronald Hernandez, because I mean, that would have been ugly, actually. So, in a way, we got spared a little bit too, but I mean, you look at the stats in this match, and I mean, it's fairly even for most. Excuse me.
Excuse you.
And the XG. I mean, FC Cincy had the really strong chances, obviously, because of our giveaways or lack of being able to play people offside. I mean, our XG was 2.1, theirs was 2.5. I mean, large in part, we had the better of most of it, except for the shots, which they edged it out with two more at 18 versus our 16. So, not looking at just the stats, I mean, it's like beyond that, we were playing pretty decently. We absolutely, like Michael has said, shot ourselves in the foot, and that's just led to the frustration that a lot of people have, not only with this match, but with the players, like, the coaching staff. I mean, it's just a lot. But yeah, go ahead.
I will say though that the stats say one thing, the eyeball test says a little bit of something else. I thought we came out in this game and I think we played pretty flat. Like, yeah, our stats say one thing, and we did give Cincy a game, obviously, but they seem to have been in control most of the time. Yeah, their clinical finishing wasn't that great. They needed help from us to get on the board, and they got it. But in terms of the midfield battle, they were pretty solid. We struggled to maintain control a lot. Like, we were passing, having been intercepted, losing second ball battles, losing aerials, the tackles were not going through. Their tackles were. Obviously, they have amazing defenders on their team with Miles Robinson, and then Matt the two Miazga, others, yeah. Matt Miazga and the other guy.
Haglund, DeAndre Yedlin. I mean, it's DeAndre Yedlin, just yeah.
So, like, up and down. It's we were kind of getting put through it a bit. So, like, we were lucky, I thought, when we scored. I thought, this could change things, this could turn things around. Fortunately, it didn't. But, I mean, it kind of felt like it was coming with Cincinnati's goals. They kind of earned them, even though they weren't being clinical in front of goal. So, whether, if you want to look at the stats and say one thing, I still think this team looked significantly worse than we did against Philadelphia. I thought against Philadelphia we looked great, even though we ended up shooting ourselves in that game too. We bossed that game, but this game we did not. It was more probably on the Cincy side, even though you could make arguments for like 50-50, kind of an even game, but I think Cincinnati was more on the advantage. So it's just, I don't know what, I guess Cincinnati's just that much better. But I mean, I was very impressed that we came out and we showed Philadelphia a good game. And with Cincinnati, we just didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think FC Cincy is a better team than Philadelphia. The standings may call it pretty close a little bit, but in terms of, there's two clubs between Cincinnati and Philadelphia, but Columbus, is in between that. And yeah, I think Columbus is probably the class of this league. They're doing it in Champions League as well this week. And, I mean, I think it's a little bit of this, too. Maybe that mad dash at the end of the match, too, flattered our stats a little bit, too. Because, yeah, we were absolutely pushing for a goal. We were throwing everything forward. And, I mean, it was definitely an exciting end to the match, but obviously it wasn't enough. And it's just like, a lot of this, it was just too little too late. Like, we're always kind of at home a little bit, kind of doing the, you know, one thing or the other. It's this dichotomy. Like, okay, yeah, we pretty much crush teams, or we're having to come back. And usually we are able to do something, but this match, I mean, it's just, yeah, they're just too stout defensively. And, you know, they had all the answers to pretty much what we were trying to do. And we didn't have Lady Luck on our side to be able to kind of sneak one into the back of the net. So, you know, I think, you know, maybe it was a little bit of a factor too of, you know, home cooking for Alec Cann a little bit and Miles Robinson. They're not afraid at the bends. They've been here. You know, they've both of them have seen a lot of wars here, and you know they know what it takes to win at the bends. And so, you know, being on the opposition side just really wasn't a big deal for them. So, but yeah, you know, yeah, what we'll wrap a bow on this match, and yeah, LA United will play the Chicago Fire at Soldier Field on Saturday, and we'll have that preview later on for you in this episode. So. Moving on into the news. Well, the standings, yeah, we're slipping a little bit. And, yeah, so we're seventh below Philadelphia Union, below Toronto, Columbus, Cincinnati, New York, and Inter Miami. You know, our goal difference isn't really that bad as opposed to all the rest of the teams, but it's those drop points that we've had at home. I mean, if we got, you know, one of those at least for 3 points, it would have been, you know, we're at least at 13. So you know, that puts us kind of level with Philadelphia and Toronto, and if we get both, which very well could have, yeah, we'd be pretty much right up there with Cincinnati. And so it's a tough pill to swallow at the moment, what's going on. But yeah, hopefully we can do what we haven't done, which is win on the road. So it's gonna be a tall task.
If you're gonna do that, like if you're gonna start doing that, Chicago is a great place to start.
Right. So hopefully that is the case. But next bit of news is that LA United will host the Charlotte Independents in the round of 32 in the 2024 U.S. Open Cup, and yeah, it will be played on May 7th at 7:30. At Fifth Third Bank Stadium in Kennesaw. And yeah, the Charlotte Independents, they play in USL League One. And currently they're 6th out of 12 teams with a 2-1-0 record in league play. So yeah, I mean, it's a nascent season for them right now. But yeah, you know, another Charlotte side that we will be playing. So, you know, definitely, hopefully we can continue to own, or at least get the better of most of the matches against Charlotte. But yeah, what do you think about that draw?
Okay, here's the deal. We're done losing against USL teams. No more. It's unacceptable. No more losing against USL teams from here on out. There's no reason for it. If this, like, Memphis, you know, 90210 kind of crap happens again, like, it's unacceptable. And Pineda, like, what the heck are you doing getting out coached by a USL team? Like, that's completely unacceptable. So I'm looking forward to us putting that horrible history of choking in the Open Cup to USL teams out of the picture and moving on to a beautiful, you know, expansive future of us never dropping points again in a tournament to a USL team.
Hopefully so. I mean, yeah, Stephen Glass, obviously having coached at this level, definitely had a what's the word? Well, I mean, we'll use the phrase that he had a bone to pick, because yeah, he was let go pretty unceremoniously to a degree, but obviously as well, you know, he wasn't exactly killing it at this level for us. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I completely agree, we should not drop points to USL sides in the US Open Cup, or ever really, because yeah, us being an MLS side, that's just embarrassing, frankly. But so next bit of news, LA United, they announced that They acquired $200,000 in 2025 GAM from Toronto FC in exchange for Derek Etienne Jr., who obviously has been a complete black hole, unfortunately, since his two assists that he has had for us. But yeah, they could also acquire an additional $175,000 in GAM if some performance-based incentives are achieved. And yeah, this move was done prior to the deadline that was April 23rd at 11:59 Central Time. But Tom Boger, he also mentioned that so it's a total of 375 GAM. And in terms of us holding a big portion of Etienne's cap hit, it's still a good bit of that this year, then less of it next year. So we basically paid Etienne to go away. But
what do you think? We'll use the buyout on him?
I mean, it's possible. But, you know, we might be holding that out for maybe another player if they are underperforming. So, yeah. You know, yeah, exactly. I think the, you know, we just have to hope Etienne performs for Toronto. And, I think this is what makes sense for them is that obviously they are going to be missing Insigne for a little bit of time. And so this is some competition for places, some depth for them. So I see that as maybe why they have taken the flyer on Derek Etienne. Otherwise, we have committed highway robbery, because how in the world did we get anything for Derek Etienne?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know how you see what he's done in Atlanta and go, yeah, I want that. Yeah. But somehow we moved Miguel Berry. We moved Etienne. I'm astounded. And there was a market for these players. And I'm just so happy. I'm just so happy that we don't have to deal with that anymore. You know, it's on to the next whatever. Hopefully we're not going to get like another quagmire of a player. It's been like a revolving door of like comical signings when it comes to, you know, these like kind of these high TAM players that just don't seem to pan out. So hopefully, like I was talking about the US Open Cup, we're talking about things that we're done with starting this year. And I'm done with that style of hiring. I'm hoping Garf can like lead us in a direction. And Carlos is, being more scrutinized now that they can make better hiring decisions, so we're not getting the Jurgen Dams of the world, you know, the Derek Etienne Juniors, like people like this. We need performers, we need killers, we need tried and true, you know, proven commodities, because we're trying to win. And, you know, you don't, like we had Derek Etienne as like a potential like starter kind of guy, and Toronto's using him probably with more kind of what he belongs at, which is a depth piece. So I think we need to realign what kind of pieces we need and what kind of players fit that, and we need to get those players, because what we've been doing in the past hasn't been good enough.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, it's well said. So yeah, in a subsequent roster move, Atlanta, they moved Daniel Rios from the supplemental roster to the senior roster. So, yeah, definitely there will be some moves for some players maybe in the supplemental sense from there. So, you know, that definitely adds some kind of that roster space for a summer move probably. Hopefully, yeah, we bring in the players that we need to, because, yeah, this team is a little bit low in depth now. But next bit of news is that LA United named Javier Perez as Director of Methodology. It's a newly created position to replace the Academy Director. And he will report to Boca Negra. And Perez, he brings more than 20 years of player development experience. And he authored the U.S. Soccer Coaching Curriculum. So literally the guy who wrote the book. So, yeah, definitely should be a very, very good hire. But Matt Lowry, who was the club's academy director since 2021, he's moved into an on-field role. and he'll be serving as an individual development coach. But yeah, as the director of methodology, Perez, he will be tasked with overseeing the club's youth developments, and as well, he'll enhance the club's curriculum and methodology throughout each age group to strengthen continuity in the development pathway. And go from the Academy Futures program all the way to Atlanta United 2. So, he was part of Toronto FC's coaching staff for the 2021 MLS season, and he was an assistant coach there before he was promoted to interim head coach in July. So he's definitely got a lot of different types of experience that he will be able to pour into this role. And yeah, should be very, very interesting because, he not only began his coaching career in Spain, where he served as head coach for various age groups of Real Madrid's youth teams, but also, definitely a PhD in exercise physiology, a master's degree in sports science, and a bachelor's degree in physical education. And then, I mean, just the qualifications go on and on. He is more than qualified, but UEFA Pro license from the Spanish Federation, a UFAA license from the English FA, speaks five languages, Spanish, French, English, German, Italian. Frankly, he's more qualified than Carlos Bocanegra for his role. But, yep, definitely a guy who should do some bits for us, right?
It definitely sounds like it. That guy has a dizzying resume. So, and I think he was also part of like the NYCFC coaching staff in their run in 2021,
coach 2016 to 2020, so he guided 2020, right, for the
cup. Yeah,
so not quite for the cup that year, but definitely because 2020 was the Columbus Crew. But either way, this dude is more than qualified and should help us tremendously from a player development standpoint. And hopefully we can churn out some more homegrowns through his tutelage. But next bit of news, Doug Roberson, he pointed out some stats on Twitter, and he said and posted that some context to LA United's recent troubles in MLS before Pineda. The team was 62-10-13 when scoring first. Now it's 90-15-25. Under Pineda, 28-5-12. Before Pineda, team was 39-4-6 when scoring first at home. Now it's 61-6-11 under Pineda. It's 22-2-5. Now it's a lot of numbers that I've just thrown at you, but the crux of it is that we've gotten slightly worse in every department, unfortunately. Although still getting a lot of wins, but that's at home. But away wise, we were 23-6-7 when scoring first away. Now we're 29-9-14. So definitely a lot of losses there, because the last number are the losses. And as well as when conceding first, we are 4-37-13 before Pineda, and under Pineda we are 5-23-10. So it's pretty bad when you realize that Pineda's only been here for 3 years, and the other coaches, like, that's way different. Like, it's there were way more years and way more coaches than Pineda, and so essentially it's not great for comparison. It's also this: his overall record is 35 wins, 27 draws, 36 losses, for a win percentage of 36%. And by comparison, Franck de Boer, he had a winning percentage of 56%, highest among LA United coaches that have ever coached us. So, it's it reads for some kind of depressing, analysis in that. But what are your takeaways from the barrage of numbers that I just threw at you.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Like, as if you've been a fan of Atlanta United since Pineda's taken over, like, you can kind of feel like, yeah, this has been, you know, I think, like, if you look at some of the other coaches and the other teams and, you know, seeing what their win percentage is, I would probably put it around between the 30 and 40 on average percentage. So I think he's probably bang on average when it comes to that. But the thing is, we're not an average team. We don't want to be. We don't aspire to be. At least with, you know, Frank DeBoer talking in the 50s, like, I think that's perennially top table type team performance. And so, I mean, and we see 2019, we got pretty far. We should have probably been in the cup. Pineda's stats are not good, and it reflects teams and situations and things that happened during his time here that were not good. We have a significantly better team now, and hopefully we aren't getting the type of injury bug that we had like 2 years ago or what have you. And so hopefully, you know, he can. It's so difficult because it's always like, when are we going to see Pineda and Atlanta United firing on all cylinders 100%? And the fact of the matter is, it seems like you're rarely going to get to see that. And it seems to me, Pineda, in order to get to like that 50% mark, he's going to need that to be at 100% at all times. And it just doesn't seem that that's going to be the case. So either the personnel is not good or he's not a good enough coach. It might be a bit of both.
Right. And it's a bit of this too, where it seems like from the lack of health that our players have, I mean, you know, we mentioned this in the live post-match fan reactions as well, that, okay, we need to start auditing as well what our, you know, training staff, our medical team are doing to get our players back, you know, but also the training methods and possibly every single factor that could be leading to any of the injuries. You know, I think we mentioned that Miles Robinson, maybe he has a point, but it's a bit of this too, where you know, Pineda, he does need to also be able to coach these players that if they're not the starters, because everyone knows, like, okay, when we have our starters, yes, you know, we're good, we can beat on our day any team in the league. But the issue is, so if we are short, well, it's pretty much a foregone conclusion almost. And that's the difference, is that we need to be able to make these players that are from 12 to 18 or 12 to 23 better than when they first came in. And how many of those players can we actually say that? There's not. Like, I mean, I guess it's like Caleb Wiley, but on his trajectory, he's already been. He's rising because of other factors, I feel like, not because of Gonzalo Pineda. And so,
yeah,
you know, and then you have other players as well, maybe a Jay Fortune. It's not like he's getting game time. Like, so it's not because of that that he's, you know, growing. Like, I feel like it's a whole bunch of other things that's, you know, the players that are already improving. But how about those, you know, those 22, 23, 24-year-olds that come in? Are they improving? I think that's not what we're seeing. So it's something that I think proves a little bit that, yeah, at least from a coaching department, it's pretty average. And, you know, those players or those coaches that can actually get their players to get that, you know, 1% better every day, that's really kind of the elite echelon in this league. And but anyway, yeah, next bit of news, Kubo Torres, that name, interesting, he got a 2-year ban for doping, unfortunately, and he's been playing for Herediano in the Costa Rican top flight. But yeah, that's pretty embarrassing. I mean, Kubo Torres, you know, I guess, you know, it's like he's that down bad that he has to figure out a way to kind of stay playing. But yeah, now he's definitely he's retired.
Things didn't end well for you at Atlanta United, but you had a good career at MLS before that, and you had some respect. You know, when you were good for, like, you know, Houston, and, you know, when you were playing there. And so, like, doing something like this, when it's the twilight of your career, why spoil it all now? Why besmirch your reputation with something like this in the twilight of your career? It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yep. So, definitely, you know, Kubo Torres, that's definitely very disappointing. But, moving on from that, LA United 2, they announced a signing of free agent defender Ramzi Kawasmi. Oh, that's a difficult one. But, the 24-year defender, he spent 5 seasons at Providence College before playing with Louisville City during the 2023 season. And Kawasmi is signed through the 2024 next pro season with a team option for 2025. Shortage of defenders at the twos right now, so it makes sense. But LA 2 had a couple of fixtures while we were, kind of in terms of between these two games. And so they unfortunately fell 4-1 to FC Cincy 2. On Sunday afternoon, and then on Wednesday night, though, they were able to defeat Chattanooga FC 1-0, and so they earned their second win of the season. Armas had a penalty goal, Javier Armas, so definitely kudos to the twos for getting their second win of the season. But that does it for the news, and it gets us into the mailbag, and you guys send in these questions through IG Story and Discord. And yes, we will go with the Patreon members in our Discord first, because they get that privilege. But first question comes from Gavin. Are we going to finally play good enough to keep leads and win games, or are we going to keep gifting teams what they want to steal our 3 points like every game? Will this BS finally end Saturday?
Well, depends on the team we play, because it's going to be a team that can capitalize on gifts that we give them. So far, the teams that we've done that to, I mean, like, outside of it being a penalty, like against New York City, because they weren't going to be able to hit, you know, the broadside of a barn, but like Philadelphia and Cincinnati, those teams, you give them an inch and they'll take a mile. Chicago, I think, is going to be more in the New York City boat, in which they're going to need all the help they can get to try and get a result against us. So, you know, if we don't feed them an easy goal, I think we can probably beat them. And I think we'll have more players back this time, more of our veteran leadership type players, people who hold the team together when things start to fall apart. And hopefully we can hold a lead as well if we take it, which I think we probably will against Chicago.
Yeah. So, hopefully that is the case. It's been definitely a very frustrating couple weeks, a few weeks. So, it's exactly what Michael said, but also, at home, we got to take care of business. That's just straight up, like, to the point, that's what needs to happen. But on the road, it's a little bit more of a roll of the die, unfortunately. But next question comes from Indomitable17. Are we okay with defensive players we have right now, or should we reinforce during the summer under the new roster rules? I think we, touched on this a little bit, but which players or which positions do you feel like we need to reinforce?
It's a good question. There's a little uncertainty for me revolving the back line. I mean, just taking the injury picture out of it. I mean, Stian, I think, is a lock when he gets back. I think he's going to be a great player for us for a good amount of time. Noah Cobb has ascended. Seeing him play is really impressive. Obviously, he has these migraines that can take him out of a game at random times, which hopefully You know, if anyone knows migraines, it can be a real, you know, crapshoot about predicting when they'll happen. So, you know, who knows what that'll be like going forward. Hopefully it won't be so bad for him. And then you have like a question mark, like Abram, who seemed to have lost his position to Williams for a while. He comes in these last couple games for, because, like, you know, Williams was injured again. Well, not again, but another injury for us. So he came in and he's been looking okay. Not bad. And so now I'm like, we have a lot of like okay defenders. But then I, you know, and then Williams is good when he was playing, and I actually quite prefer him over Abram. So then it makes me think, what are we going to do with Abram? I'm not sure he's the guy for us. So perhaps that could be an avenue in the future, because I just haven't seen enough from him that makes me really happy about him. And when you have a guy like Williams come in who can just supplant you like that, it just, it's like, what is going on here? So that could be an avenue we look at in the future. I don't know if it's a near future type thing. I don't remember what Abram's contract looks like, so I can't tell you if like it makes sense to start now. But I mean, and also things can change. Like I said, there's a lot of like flux going on with the defenders right now. Like guys who are not supposed to do that good are doing good, and guys who are supposed to do good are doing bad or getting injured, and it's just, you're like, wow, what is going on here?
Right. And I think it's this, it's, you know, I agree with pretty much most of what you said. It's our fullback depth, though. Yeah, we absolutely need to bring somebody in that can defend. That's the, like, Ronaldo Hernandez, not really a defender. Brooks Lennon, you know, getting better, but also defensively, there are some moments where, yeah, that's kind of why we concede as many goals as we do, is each of them still, they have their deficiencies a little bit. And, you know, so it is a bit of that. Caleb Wiley, still learning his trade. It's, we need somebody that can shut down at least the winger. And, you know, it's going to be difficult, I think, until we do, to really have full confidence in this defensive core to just shut teams out every single match. And I think until we can do that, that leads us to our next question, which comes from JWin20. He says, where do you rate us in your latest power rankings? Is this team capable of winning trophies this year? And that's where, for me, I'll answer it first, because I'm trying to segue it. Basically, without us being stout defensively, I don't see us winning too much, because essentially where we are in the power rankings, I feel like we're smack dab mediocre in the middle. Like we're probably, you know, 15th, 16th, at least in the league right now. Like we're a little bit of fool's gold like we were last season. Like we are very dangerous in attack, but can you trust us to keep teams out? Can't. I can't see it at the moment. And so, you know, if that's not happening, we have to outscore teams. And yes, it's like we, like, you know, kind of Darren Eels, his ethos coming in, you know, that was kind of the, okay, yeah, we'll win games 4-3, we'll win games 3-2, but, you know, will it win you championships? That's just hard to see. But yeah, what do you see?
I think it's if you have to look at it in terms of the kind of Atlanta United team you're grading in terms of a power ranking. I think, you know, when we are the kind of team we are now, you know, you don't have a starting striker, you are missing your two central center backs, like these types of injuries make a team that I think seventh place is like probably fairly accurate. So I would be okay with saying, you know, like a seventh place somewhere around there is probably fair, which is like similar to where we were last year overall. Now, overall this year though, if we were, you know, if we're able to, like I said, keep a consistent 100% for this team, for a good amount of the season, which it just seems so damn hard. But if we are, I think this team is better than seventh, very much so. I think that they can be, they could make a shot for top four. And I expect them to do that. If we can see like Yorgos consistently playing for basically the rest of the season, because he's going to be out internationally speaking. So he's going to really have to make a lot of the games he has. And you know, if we don't get a lot of other injuries and Steen comes back, I mean, I think we can get there. Cause I mean, we talk about wanting to be more, solid on defense. Well, that's what Steen was brought in for. That's what Schlitz was brought in for. Schlitz is still there, and I still think our, you know, our goal differential talks and speaks to the fact that we are a better defensive team this year. Granted, yeah, we are doing bizarre things that make us hemorrhage goals occasionally, but outside of that, when you have Schlitz closing things down, you know, Brad doesn't have to do these, you know, more acrobatic saves, which he can't do at all. So we aren't having to take, you know, goals from another team that are like, you know, because no one closed that guy down at the top of the box because Schlitz is there and Tristan is there. So I think with those guys, and when we get, you know, and Steen is back more normally, like, we will be better defensively. We'll have a lot less goals conceded this year than last year. And I'm hoping that we'll have the same firepower as last year. It's just, again, it's, can we keep this team consistently healthy long enough to string some results together and to get a high goal differential? I it's hard. It just seems like this team sometimes just a plague goes through them, a contagious injury bug. And it's just like once one falls, then another. And it's just every week, every game, I'm worried another guy's going to go down. It just, it's so anxiety inducing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, next question comes from Crisco, .25, with an apropos question here. Do we need replacements for the players who will leave for their international competitions? And yeah, I mean, that's the difficulty, is kind of what you're mentioning, is that a lot of our star players will be either gone for the Olympics, Euros, you know, other competitions, and yeah, it really makes it where the summer, I have no idea some of the positions who will be playing. It will be pretty much where, like, we don't have anybody to spell them either. We basically can't even sub them off because we're so, like, low in depth in those positions. So, yeah, absolutely, we will need replacements. But oddly enough, if healthy, at striker, we are the deepest that we, you know, have been in a while, at least in terms of trust in those players. But you know, obviously, still, it's if most of the teams are playing with that many players out, like we are, yeah, I'll feel a little bit more comfortable maybe with Jamal Tiari up top. But you know, he's not replacing the production that Yakumakis brings. But your thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is a question I keep getting. Like, should Atlanta United look at hiring guys or signing guys that, you know, are very good, like equally as good as some of the guys, like, you know, as Jean De Silva or like Saba if he doesn't go to Georgia? Like, I'm sure that that's part of the calculus. I'm sure that they're not stupid, that, you know, the front office says, okay, you know, let's wait the possibility of this guy being like someone we can sell on. And then obviously if they're someone we're looking to sell on, they're likely going to be playing for their national team. They're likely going to be kind of a fledgling superstar like Thiago Almada. So, you know, when it comes to that, and this is also, you know, putting our eggs in the international basket hasn't always been bad for us. 2018, we had a lot of players who went away on international duty, and we still won the cup. 2019, we won the Open Cup. Like, we still found ways to do it. It's not that, you know, it's not that, like, because we didn't have a lot of international players that we were able to go far in those competitions. No, I think that we can figure it out, if even if we have international players. However, like I said, I still think it's probably part of the calculation that they use to be like, you know, is, you know, let's compare this about, you know, Is this someone who we're going to make a lot of money on in terms of sell on? And so they're not going to really care that they play for their national team. Is that, you know, is that so much more of an attractive thing than having the advantage of them not going to their national team, sticking around like a Darlington Nagbe or a Lucho Acosta or something like this? You know, there's a trade-off because Lucho Acosta's not going anywhere. Darlington Nagbe's not going anywhere. So Thiago Mata is, you know. So you can make an argument. You just have to look at it and say, you know, which one you value more. And in obvious terms, Thiago Mata just makes more sense. But you could make more arguments for, like, TAM players. Like, you know, the fact that Jhonny Silva's not going anywhere is a good thing to me. You know, your high TAM players not going somewhere, I think, is a good thing. Chelis is a bit of a, like, oof. That's nervy. That's nervy. So I don't like that, maybe, of all of the, because, you know, the calculus there is there's no sign on really with him, you know, like, we're not like trying to develop this guy and sell him for millions or whatever. And it's, so it's okay if he, you know, goes away to his national team and increases his value X, Y, and Z. Right. But, you know, that's not going to happen. So he's going to go away. That's a tough one. Yeah, that one in particular might be the most, like, the biggest question mark.
Yeah, because we saw how poor the shielding of our defense was last season without a player like Sleash. And so, yeah, absolutely, I agree. It's a very worrying prospect. But next question comes from Landguy in ATL, all underscored. When Pineda said he can't influence the players once the ball starts rolling, does that mean he can't coach?
I mean, no, he's just saying, like, you know, he's come to his fevered pitch of when he was asked by Doug Robeson, like, you know, what the heck was going on with all these ridiculous plays where, you know, the other team, you know, gets the ball and scores in ridiculous scenarios. You know, obviously he didn't word it like that, but, like, I mean, if you're Gonzalo Pineda, how do you not feel like you need to pull your hair out at a game where you're dominating and then Mascaro gives a hospital ball to, you know, Philly striker and then they score? Like how you, like, you're about to get a good result in New York City and then Tristan just gets a penalty. Like, this is not like, oh, it's part of Pineda's tactical plan that these decisions the individual players made are the result of that tactical plan. No, these were just boneheaded mistakes that hopefully don't happen again. They're like one out of a million type of scenarios, hopefully with the Mascaro ball. So, you know, I could see why he would say something like that, because he's clearly frustrated. So, but the bigger question about whether or not he can coach, I think, like we said, he's pretty much an average coach. He's not pushing it plus or minus in either direction for any of the players or the team as a whole. And at least if you want to be a good coach in MLS, you got to have a couple index points in the positive. But we haven't really seen that, I think, since DeBoer or Tata.
Exactly. Yeah, from a you know, kind of tactics standpoint, yeah, he's not a coach that will X's and O's, you know, kind of jump off the page to be able to win us a game with his management or his coaching. I mean, I think that much is clear at this moment. He's still, you know, very, very early on in his coaching career. And, you know, it's arguable whether this was the right move or not. And I think time is saying right now that it hasn't been. But, you know, it's hard to see him getting the sack. It's just, you know, kind of going to be probably an end of season type of thing if that is the case. But yeah, that is the mailbag. But yeah, we'll get into the match preview now. And so on Saturday, it will be against the Chicago Fire at Soldier Field. And yeah, I mean, they lost 4-0 to RSL last week. It was a drubbing, but to be fair, RSL. Yeah. At their house. And yeah, to be fair though, RSL have been cooking. They are, I believe, third in the West and having a really great start to their season. But they also lost 3-0 to us last month at the Benz on the 31st of March. And our last six against them, we've won three, drawn two, and lost one. So, yeah, we definitely have pretty much taken care of business when we have played against them. But yeah,
we like playing in Chicago. We like this.
Chicago's a good opponent for us usually when we need to kind of figure out some things or, you know, get into the win column again. You know, it's been happening since the 2017 year because our first win was against the Chicago Fire. So, yeah, in terms of, you know, the players to look out for them, yeah, Kellen Acosta has definitely, you know, been a player for them that who will kind of really boss their midfield and will definitely need to make sure that we keep him in check. Yeah, Hugo Kuipers, of course, Andrew Gutman, you know, has re-signed with his boyhood team, and Tobias Salquist. But yeah, I think a lot of Chicago Fire fans also would hope that in terms of key departures, that Shaqiri, Jordan Shaqiri, is no longer a Fire. But, you know, that is not the case because, yeah, they just want him gone. But, I mean, it's one of these things where I hope he plays because it's pretty much kind of a black hole for them when he is playing. But, yeah, you know, in terms of their predictions from around the league, in terms of pundits, they are predicted to finish as high as 7th and as low as 13th. So definitely mostly out of the, I think on average, they have them at 11th. So they are out of a playoff spot in that scenario. And of course, last season, they didn't qualify for the playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, it's a team that's, yeah, defending not so great. They're pretty weak. They are a team that is pretty good aerially and is kind of pretty good at coming back from losing positions as long as they're not being blown out completely. But, yeah, so for you, Michael, yeah, what are you wanting to see from this match from a play standpoint?
From a play standpoint, I want to see us attack this game. I want to see, you know, it's tough because it'll come down to the starting lineup, I guess, with how we'll approach it. But I want to see us attack this game. Chicago is a team that's there for the taking. If we're a good team, if we're a contender, we truly are, we should be putting these types of teams to bed, even away. So, and we need these. We need these wins away against weak teams because that's where we're going to find them. We're not going to find wins away against strong teams. It's just not going to happen. So it's not what you should expect either. So this is what you should expect. And if we don't win here, I hear a lot of people talking about firing Pineda from if they don't get a win against Chicago on this weekend. That'll be interesting to see if that transpires. I don't think that that'll be the case. We should beat them. And I think we should do it pretty dominantly. Again, I think we should attack them. We should suffocate them. We should show them that we're the better team all around the pitch. You know, and again, like I said, it'll come down to our starting lineup. If I think it'll depend if we have our 100% lineup out, our ideal 11, I think we're going to win by a lot. If we don't, I think we're still going to win, but not by a lot.
Okay, well, yeah, before we get into the predictions, Luis Abram and Jay Fortune spoke to the media, and they were talking about how to manage those moments in the game. And, yeah, Abram, he mentioned that, yeah, we have to manage the situation that we're in and be more intelligent. I don't think it's just on the defenders. As a team, we work together. We are 11 players. Yeah, it's absolutely a team effort for sure. So I agree with him. Jay Fortune, he said, one of the biggest issues that we've had the past few games is a lot of the chances we give up are ones we do to ourselves. That has been our focus today after the film session today, just putting ourselves in positions to try and reduce changes the other or chances the other team gets. So yeah, it absolutely is hopefully a big focus for them is to have composure, manage the game, and be a team that is defensively hard to play through. So, you know, hopefully that is the importance that they put on it. But yeah, as far as unavailable players coming into this match, likely for Chicago Fire, Chase Gaspar, Marin Haile Selassie, Tobias Salquist, and also questionable is Shaqiri. But yeah, LA United, Stan Gregerson, he trained this week, so there's a possibility he might make the squad or maybe even the 11. We'll see. Jamal Tiare, he's out 1 to 2 weeks still with that hamstring, and Derek Williams out probably at least one more week with the calf. So, you know, still a few players out at least so far. But yeah, getting into that predicted starting 11, well, Josh Cohen, he started for LA United 2s, so probably unlikely he's going to be switched out either for this match. Although, you know, we gave up 2 goals last match. I mean, is there a time for, you know, a goalkeeper change?
If you're asking me, I don't think those goals were on him at all, so no. But again, I don't care. I don't think these games will be won or lost on our goalkeeper. So, you know, I if for some reason they put in Josh Cohen, I'd be like, okay, great. I hope he does great. And if they put in Brad, I'd be like, okay, I hope he does great. I don't think either one's going to be like, you know, one or the other will be like, oh no, now we're definitely going to lose, or oh yes, now we're definitely going to win. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you, except for the I don't care part, but yeah, for sure, I get you. But the yeah, in terms of
as long as you do put a goalie out,
yeah, I'll exactly, be happy. Yeah, baseline, yeah. But yeah, into the defenders. I mean, it's probably picking itself right now. Unfortunately, who knows? But yeah, if Noah Cobb's healthy, it pretty much is probably gonna be the same back line: Lennon, Cobb, Abram, Wiley. I would imagine that you know, Stan Gregerson doesn't really see minutes quite yet, unless the auras from you know, the contacts from Noah Cobb are still detrimental, but probably fine. We saw him post some IG stories, so yeah, Noah Cobb's probably okay vision wise but yeah, as far as midfield, you know, you see any changes? Schleisch, Riyamba?
No, and I expect them to have massive games. If we're going to unwind Chicago, it's going to largely be through them and their play. They're going to need to have big games. They're going to really need to show up. I'm hoping, I mean, it almost feels like every game Tristan is trying to put things on his back a bit and be like, I'm going to score now. You know, I'm going to finally get. So hopefully that'll be something that happens, but I don't think it's necessary. I just want him and Schleisch to work their butts off, because I think that will be how we really unsettle Chicago and how we manage the game.
Yeah. And as well, Muyamba on the road, it's a little bit of a, you know, kind of roll the die sometimes. He
yellow card machine too, yeah.
Exactly. He's almost night and day. And so hopefully, yeah, the good Muyamba shows up, and a disciplined Muyamba. So, yeah, getting into the wings, I mean, Saba definitely on the right, but yeah, it's been a revolving door recently at left wing. Who do you see starting for this match?
If Zonde's capable, I want to see him, because I want them to go back. I want them to be able to go back to the way things were, where you would have your starting, you know, wingers out, and then when they got tired, which they almost always did, you would sub in, you know, like Wolf, or you'd sub in Mascara, and you have these guys just attack. And it was fun to watch. It's exciting watching that app. So, like, I want to see more of that again, because when we're one guy down, it's like, you know, we talked about this, maybe it was like the previous episode, or was it on the live stream? But basically, like, you know, the value of having a Mascara as like your trump card It's like the prestige in Magic. Like Pineda has that in his back pocket, and he can deploy it, and it hurts teams. And he's always kind of going like, I have that to rely on. But when you don't have that, you know, he looks at his bench. He's like, well, there's not. If we haven't scored yet, we ain't scoring now. So, like, I want to go back to, we still have trump cards on the bench that we can use. That makes me far more confident and comfortable. If we don't have that, it's a little desperate.
Mm-hmm. It did. Yeah, likewise, I hope Silva does get the start.
Yeah, I'm going to have to defer to you for this to kind of troll your memory for a second for, does Pineda, when people come back from injuries, does he decide to put them, and then take them off? Or does he start the other guy and then put him on for reserve minutes towards the end of the game? Like, I don't know what she prefers. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I agree, because I think it's more worth trying to get that early goal to establish game state. I think that's really important, and he's probably one of the only ways to do that outside of maybe a wonder goal from Thiago Almada. So I think that's probably the best idea, is to put Yorgos first. But let me remind you also, the fact that, you know, we've been giving up leads and dropping points late in games because we don't have those leaders on the pitch anymore. You take Yorgos off, we might drop points again. So if you can survive either 0-0 or 1-1 or 2-2, and then you can bring Yorgos on, then perhaps. But we've seen, even when that does happen, we can still drop points. So maybe there is no safeguard. I think so. If Yorgos plays at least like 60 minutes or something, I think we win 2-0. If he doesn't, I think we'll win 1-0. Do you think we gift a goal again? That's damning. That's like, you know, the writing is on the wall. Yeah.